Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
So, good evening. I'm Wayne Baker. I'm here with Dr. John Haney, and thanks for listening to that pre-recorded message by our boss, Rick, who's not here with us tonight. He and Leslie have gone to Utah to do an emergency marriage seminar up there along with Rick's wife, and they're traveling back tonight, so we certainly hope they're having a safe trip home in all this weather. But now, John, since Leslie's been gone all weekend, I'm really kind of curious what kind of shape your house is in.
Strangely enough, or miraculously perhaps, it's actually in pretty good shape. I think she's going to be pleasantly surprised, but I can't take credit for that. That's really my daughter, Rachel, who did that.
So. What'd you eat?
Well, that's another
chicken
story.
McNuggets?
Right, exactly. Yeah,
Big Red?
Pretty much. That's
so with them here, with them not here, we had this all to ourselves with our good sound engineer George. So what are we going to do tonight? What are we going to talk about?
I guess anything we want to. I guess perhaps, you know, tonight we might actually begin the discussion of biblical sexuality and marriage. And I guess before we do that, we'll have to throw a little more legal stuff out there, Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who've experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. I guess that's more of a commercial than legal stuff. But
it works for me.
But we're dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. And our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who suffered pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. So if the listeners, if you have any questions and want to contact us, then please give us a call at 512-365-9930. Or if you're outside the Austin area, you can call us at 1-888-527-2367. That's 1-888-527-2367. So I think, yeah, why don't we do that? Why don't we talk about biblical sexuality and marriage tonight?
That sounds really good. It sounds really important for all of us, really. But I guess based on the work that we do, you know, it sounds especially true for couples that are fighting their way back through this maze of infidelity.
Yeah, most definitely. I think sometimes for a couple who's going through infidelity to get back to a place where they even have an idea about what godly sexuality looks like can be a little bit of a challenge. So I think we should probably say, you know, that some of the things we talk about tonight may stretch the listeners a little bit, thinking about marriage and sexuality, and we recognize that this can be a very uncomfortable topic for some. And once again, we, given the nature of the topic, encourage you, if you have young listeners out there, to perhaps get them out of the room or turn the radio down. But, you know, kind of I think is a good starting point on this topic of what godly sexuality is about. I sometimes like to look at godly sexuality really from a gift perspective, kind of the idea that God gives it to us as a gift, but also kind of with a recognition that he gives us the freedom to do what we will with that gift. And all too often, we use that gift destructively, and that's, you know, largely what we see in our day-to-day work life. You know, when I was a kid, I remember that all my friends used to react very, very differently with the toys they got for Christmas. I remember I'd have some friends who might get a brand new G.I. Joe. Remember those old G.I. Joes mm-hmm. Do you have the real lifelike hair and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, with the beard?
Yeah.
Oh, yep,
definitely.
I had that.
But some of my friends who would get one of those and, you know, by the afternoon of Christmas Day, they would have already tied a firecracker to the thing. shaved the hair off, you know, spray painted it, you know, and just mm-hmm. absolutely took that gift and dragged it through the mud, sometimes literally, mm-hmm. you know, and in terms of the gift of our sexuality, we all too often, particularly in this culture today, this sort of sexually charged culture, do that. We profane the gift. We sort of take it and don't put some adequate protections around it and just and don't have any appreciation whatsoever for sort of the sacredness of that gift. You know, I'd also have other friends who would get so scared of something happening to their gift that they would just leave it in the box. Never take it out at all, and maybe put G.I. Joe up in the closet, you know, and yeah, it might be worth something as a collector's item someday,
right.
But really, that didn't fulfill the function of what that toy was meant to be either. It, you know, a toy was meant to be played with. It was meant to be sort of cherished and so forth. But I think both of those friends, you know, I think the sort of the common denominator there is that neither of those kids used the gift the way it was intended. And that's very much the way it is with our sexuality sometimes. As Christians, we can err in either of those two extremes. And you know, the kid who leaves it in the box, you know, it's very much like the people who are afraid of their sexuality or perhaps of their body or of the power this thing has or this sort of phenomenon has. And so they just sort of hide that part of themselves, or they completely separate their sexuality from their spirituality, which was not the way it was intended to be, which I hope we'll get to talk mm-hmm. about it a little bit. So kind of the ideal sort of middle ground, sort of that godly middle ground, using sort of the G.I. Joe analogy, is that you know, it was meant to be taken out of the box and played with, and in the course of being played with, you know, the G.I. Joe is going to get scuffed up a little bit. It's going to, you know, it may not look as pristine as it did, but that was, you know, what function the toy was meant to sort of fulfill.
Kind of like the Velveteen Rabbit story.
Most
too,
definitely.
Right?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite books, actually. Love that book since I was a kid. You know, but you know, sort of finding a way to embrace and own our sexuality without profaning it. And that can be a very, very difficult line to walk, particularly in this culture. And I must say that sort of Christians have erred on both extremes as well. You know, I think just about every manner of sexual sin, either on the pathological shame side or the pathological indulgence side, have been justified using Christianity, and both are sort of equal distortions. I mean, particularly during the sexual revolution, there was a big movement towards, you know, free love and trying to justify that on a Christian basis, and you know, and obviously that was a distortion. But also, you know, unfortunately, throughout the ages, We've sort of seen this opposite trend in Christianity, where sexuality is seen as a destructive thing or an ugly thing, an evil thing that we should only take out and use for making babies and quickly put away. And that's a distortion, too. Sometimes looking at it from the gift perspective, if we really embrace the idea that sexuality is a gift from God, then I really believe that sort of telling God that his gift is evil is every bit as sinful as taking that gift and dragging it through the mud. And so, you know, I guess our task as Christians is to try to figure out where that godly middle ground is with our sexuality.
Yeah. I think I agree with you with Hollywood and in the culture that we live in right now. It kind of perpetuates that idea, doesn't it?
Most definitely. I mean, it's, you know, and it's a particularly kind of when we work with young people, some of the influences on sexuality can kind of create a tremendous double bind with people trying to figure out where they stand on this stuff. You know, on the one hand, they're validated for expressing themselves sexually, and at the same time, they're getting messages that good Christian kids don't do that sort of thing. And so even coming to make some sense out of how to balance that can be such a difficult thing. But I have a very fond of a psychologist by the name of Viktor Frankl, and one of the things he always said was that sort of the shadow of freedom is always responsibility. And in this culture, particularly in this sexually drive culture, we can indulge in the freedom side very, very easily, but we forget that freedom has a price and that we need to really balance that with a responsibility and really, you know, sort of cherish that freedom and use it responsibly. He used to say that we have the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast as a monument to freedom, but he said that we should really balance that with a statue of responsibility on the West Coast, and he suggested that Alcatraz would be a pretty good example of what that might be.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
John MacArthur here with an important reminder about the Grace to You program that you hear on The Word 99.3 and 98.5. One thing I love about radio is that no matter where you are, we can reach out and provide the biblical nourishment that you and your neighbors need right when you need it. But we can't do it without listener support. Would you make it a point to keep in touch on a regular basis and let us know you stand with us? Be sure to join me for Grace to You weekday mornings at 5 after 6 here on The Word, 99.3 and 98.5. Teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
So welcome back. Welcome back to A Fair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of God. We are honored to have you join us. Remember that this program is not suited for children. If you have any questions, John and I would love to hear from you. Please give us a call at 1-888. I don't have the number.
Yeah, call us at 1-888 at 527-2367.
Great.
That's 1-888-527-2367.
Or locally at 365-9930. So John, just listening to you talk a few minutes ago about really that sexuality is a gift from God, it seems to me that the thought occurs that this really kind of began in the garden, didn't it, with Adam and Eve? What do you think about that?
Most definitely. And I think, I don't know, a lot of Christians kind of get hung up sometime on the question of whether that was literal truth or metaphorical truth, and really that doesn't concern me at all, because I see it as truth no matter how it flies that way. I think it is such a pregnant story in terms of the richness of trying to understand our behavior and why we do what we do. And I think absolutely it really does go back to the garden. I think there's so much in that story that sort of references what our sexuality was meant to be and sort of what happened and what caused the distortion in it. But I think in Genesis 1:27, it talks about that God created them male and female. And, that seems like a very simple little point that we can kind of gloss over. But when you really start looking at that and start really thinking about what it means to be male and what it means to be female, our bodies really do not make sense at all unless we're in relationship with the opposite gender. If you look at sort of a man's body parts or a woman's body parts by themselves, without that sort of compliment on the other side, it would seem almost ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a point that I think kind of gets overlooked sometimes, that they were created to be different, and we were created as sexual beings. And I think we gloss over that sometimes. I mean, what really defines a man and a woman other than, sort of their sexual differences? That's sort of the primary difference in what makes us man and what makes us woman. But I think what's interesting is when God created us, he proclaimed it not just good, but very good. Mm. And I think that's something we need to look at too.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I love what you're saying about when God created us, he created us in his image, and he said, let us make them male and female. So I think, Rick says, I know John Eldredge says, Dallas Willard, some other guys have said, we bear the image of God down to the level of our gender. And so I don't want to give Satan too much credit, but it seems that wherever he's going to attack us, it's going to be at the level of the image we bear and not not just for attacking a sake, but because of the image.
Most definitely. And I think, you know, again, sort of in this atmosphere of our own shame sometimes, where we'll try to take sexuality out of our spirituality. But given what you just said, you know, really the image of God, the sort of the very image of who God is stamped into the atoms of our being. It's very much enmeshed in our sexuality and our sexual identity. And that's where I think we need to take shame out of this equation when we can, and trying to re-embrace what godly sexuality is all about. I know one of the things I think one of the distortions that we as Christians have achieved at some point is, you know, somewhere along the lines, many of us started equating prudishness with purity, that if we can kind of take a reactive stance against sexuality, that somehow we're being spiritual and we're being righteous, and nothing could be further from the truth. You know, again, it's about sort of embracing that image of God in our sexuality and letting our sexuality be sort of a way to glorify God.
Yeah. Well, it seems that the flip side of that, or the further extreme, is this whole romantic notion of love that we seem to be engrossed in now in our culture.
Most definitely. You know, and we do have this, you know, we're sort of wed to this idea of romanticism. And, you know, no doubt it seems like a very beautiful thing when you're going through it. I mean, I think I remember the first crush I had in my life. I you know, the sky was never bluer and the grass was never greener than when I was, you know, saw this girl. And that's a wonderful feeling, and don't want to take away from that. But one of the problems of romanticism is romanticism sort of depends upon what this other person can do for me. And God's really not in that equation a whole lot, you know. And romanticism also kind of gives this idea that we're supposed to be happy all the time and it's supposed to be easy all the time. I mean, every fairy tale that we were raised on growing up kind of ends with the idea that they lived happily ever after. And then, you know, the credits roll in the Disney film and there's a bright sunset and the hero and the heroine walk off into the sunset. But we never really get to talk about what happens after that, you know, when the marriage really starts getting real and in some cases really starts getting difficult. And I think a lot of the problem in our culture is we're so wed to this idea of romanticism and sort of meeting our soulmate that's going to complete us, that we really, again, take God out of a picture, you know, altogether. And then somewhere, you know, 2-3 years into the marriage, when things aren't going so well and we're not feeling happy, we're feeling cheated. You know, that's why we get so many couples coming in at about year 2 or year 3 saying, mm-hmm. I'm ready to divorce this person. This isn't the person I married. And it really wasn't the person they married. You know, we put our best foot forward, and romanticism sometimes really keeps us from seeing each other as we really are, to be fully sort of transparent to one another. I know Genesis also kind of talks about that the two are naked and not ashamed in mm-hmm. Genesis 2. You know, and I think sometimes we only think about that in physical terms, that we were sort of physically naked and not ashamed. But I think real godly kind of sexuality and real godly kind of intimacy is to be able to see each other in all of our emotional nakedness and all of our spiritual nakedness, to really put ourselves out there, not hold anything back, and be known and loved despite all of that. And I think that's when we start getting towards that standard of unconditional love, you know, and not away from that sort of romantic idea that's based on what can you do for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I may be getting ahead of ourselves, but the whole notion of the marital sex and the other, then, you know, we think about premarital sex or extramarital sex, but really we don't kind of approach it that way,
right?
Do we? The marital sex and there's marital sex and there's non-marital sex. Am I getting ahead of us?
No, I mean, that's absolutely
that's what's coming up.
Absolutely true. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that we really kind of wanted to talk about tonight, is sort of, you know, what does make up marital sex? You know, and you know, I sometimes say to clients that, you know, any 2 13-year-olds can pull off the physical act of sex, and that doesn't mm-hmm. make it a sort of.
And unfortunately, a lot of us grown men still have 13-year-old views of
absolutely.
Sex and sexuality.
Absolutely, and we can kind of get stuck at the, you know, in fact, we talk about sort of arousal template distortions and things like that, where we tend to do get stuck at sort of the undeveloped parts of our sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of our lust and a lot of our sort of distortions with the idea that sex is going to meet some kind of need for us is based on that idea that, you know, we get kind of stuck with some things that never really fully matured in our sexuality. And I think part of embracing godly sexuality and sort of getting that in marriage is about getting past kind of those old wounds, those old distortions, those old sort of sometimes immature ways that we really look at it and start seeing the bigger and deeper picture. And we're going to talk a little more about sort of what makes, you know, godly sexuality and marital sex versus non-marital sex. You know, I actually pulled a few stats up here that kind of show exactly how far we've really fallen. I think one of the tragedies of reading the Genesis story and kind of the idea of going back to the garden is at some level our souls seem to be really longing for that sort of that pristine kind of place where there was a sort of an innocence, you know, talk about paradise lost, you know, and it's so sad to kind of see what's happened, you know, kind of talking about our immature sexuality. You know, just for an example, you know, back in the 1950s, there were only a handful of sexually transmitted diseases. And now, in the early part of the 21st century, there's more than 30, and some of them will literally kill you. You know, some of them are absolutely lethal. You know, and how far we've fallen from that sort of ideal standard. You know, I also saw another statistic that said that you know, pornography revenues now surpass the combined revenues of the four top networks in the United States. That's CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox. And you think about that, and just what a multi-billion-dollar industry pornography has become. You know, the Senate Judiciary Committee several years back gave a statistic that said that in the United States, adult bookstores outnumber McDonald's restaurants by a ratio of 3-1. And that's changing a little bit, but only because with the internet, adult bookstores have sort of come into everybody's home. We don't need them like we did before. They're actually, everybody's got their own adult bookstore at their fingertips potentially. And unfortunately, too many people are really using them. You know, also, we've said on this program before, I believe that, you know, sort of normalizing this struggle for us that Christianity Today, which is a fairly mainstream Christian publication, gave a statistic that about 37% of clergy admitted to struggling with pornography in a survey that they did, you know, and that's probably underrepresented if you kind of look at the nature of surveys and statistical analysis with them. So, you know, for those of you who are out there listening, who are struggling with sexuality and sort of with temptation, you know, you're in really good company. Our intent here is not to call you out because that would just make Wayne and I hypocrites, you know, but sort of the intent is for all of us to kind of get back to a place of healing and sort of re-embracing that sort of idea of godly sexuality. You know, a final stat I'd want to throw out there is that, you know, right now the United States leads all industrialized nations in the rate of teenage pregnancy. And, you know, that's a sobering and an unfortunate kind of statistic when you think about, you know, that really, you know, we do profess to be a Christian country and you know, although that's we do a whole nother show on that, I guess, but don't want to open that can of worms, but I think the bottom line is, you know, we have fallen a great length from that ideal that's talked about in Genesis but I think, you know, so many of us are kind of longing to get back there, and I think that even in our sexual acting out in and out of marriage sometimes, I think even that is a reflection of wanting to fill that void, wanting to sort of reclaim that, sort of wanting some kind of connection once again, but we're pursuing it in some pretty destructive ways.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, so we're going to take another break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Are your mortgage payments crippling your budget because your adjustable rate mortgage is going up? Are you a first-time home buyer not sure if you can afford a new home? The mortgage rates have just dropped again, close to all-time lows. Call Mortgages USA now at 1-800-768-6209. That's 1-800-768-6209. Call them for your free quote today at 1-800-768-6209. Texas Mortgage Broker License Number 12815. That's 1-800-768-6209.
Hope. Hope for the brokenhearted. Hope for those who have made a mistake. Hope for those impacted by a betrayal. Hope for couples who feel no hope. The Affair Recovery Center is designed to offer hope, direction, and help for couples and individuals whose lives have been ripped by infidelity. There is hope at the Affair Recovery Center. We can all personally testify to what God can do By what we have personally experienced, let us help. We are a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We can be reached at affairrecovery.com, or you can call toll-free at 888-527-2367. That's 888-527-2367.
So I'm told that we have a caller, and it's Sarah from Buda. How are you doing, Sarah?
Hi. Well, I'm okay. I thank you for your program, first of all. I just wanted to give you a quote that I heard a Catholic priest say, that when we don't honor virginity in our males and females in our society, then we start sexualizing our young at an earlier and earlier age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that's pretty evident. I wanted to ask you a question about sexual addiction. I know most people talk about pornography and stuff on the internet, but I'm just wondering, I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but when my husband and I were together, when he would get angry with me, he would go and buy, say, an Elle magazine or, some sort of magazine like that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So is that a form of sexual addiction then?
Well, it's hard to say without kind of looking at the big pattern, whether that's an actual and addictive kind of pattern or not. It's certainly not a healthy thing to do, I would say. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with sort of trying to define sexual addiction is, even in the mental health profession, we don't have sort of a clear-cut set of guidelines on what really constitutes sexual addiction, but usually it deals with a long-term pattern of sort of out-of-control behavior and an inability to stop, even though you try to and so forth. But that said, I mean, there are a lot of guys who will find ways to sort of justify their behavior. And by the way, you're in really good company with that too. There's a lot of husbands who sort of play that game, and sometimes they will sort of deceive themselves and use the argument as something or their anger as a justification for doing what they're doing. And of course, that's garbage. That really isn't. But I think one of the really important things for you is to not think that he's doing that in response to anything you're doing or not doing. I don't want you taking any responsibility for that at all.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, unfortunately, we're separated. Mm. So, but anyway, yeah, because I wasn't even aware of sexual addiction. I'm in the Celebrate Recovery at church.
Yeah, it's a good program.
And, yeah, it is. And so I think there are some subtleties that maybe aren't talked about that much. I think we kind of see the big picture as pornography and, the internet stuff. But I think there's subtler things. I mean, just like, Victoria's Secret magazine.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
And, which is, oh, goodness.
And you're right. And for someone who is an addict, they tend to sexualize everything.
Everything.
I mean, it doesn't it doesn't have to be pornography per se. I mean, and the range of sort of what we would consider addictive behavior, yeah, sometimes goes well beyond pornography. And again, the internet has just opened that wide open. But we talk about the different kinds of affairs and everything here. But yeah, sort of the compulsive sexual behavior can manifest itself in just almost infinite numbers of ways. And unfortunately, we live in a society that gives all too many opportunities for doing that.
So I guess then it's really what's in one's mind when they're looking at the pictures.
Oh, definitely. I mean,
yeah.
I think, kind of going to that idea, that to the impure, all things are impure.
Mm-hmm.
That, the body is not a shameful thing, but I think sort of the way it's portrayed in pornography is, we kind of look at the intent of it sometimes. I mean, pornography is designed specifically to incite lust. There's nothing about sort of glorifying God's creation or the glory of women or men who are in pornography as well. It's all about exploiting and making a profit off of this thing. And there's just nothing godly in that whole that whole exchange. But
mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I think there's a whole this culture, I was, when I used to watch regular TV and I'd even going through the channels and all, there's so many murder things on, and it's the murdering of women. And I'm thinking there's just it seems like there's all a misogyny going on, you know.
Most definitely there
against
is.
Against women.
You know, if and
but it's so subtle that people just think, oh, well, this is just another, you know, murder mystery.
You bet. We sort of normalize it and sanitize it. But, you know, one of the, you know, when we do talk about sexual addiction, one of the things is it's usually not about the sort of sexual thrill itself. Really, the underlying dynamic in much of sexual addiction is power and control. Mm-hmm. For the sexual addict, it's about being able to dominate women. And when you objectify women, when you look at them on paper doing what you want them to do, there's a sort of a sense of power in that, and that's very much at play in it. But yeah, a lot of the violence against women, a lot of the underlying misogyny, as you say, definitely, you know, that's very much going on out there.
Yeah, sir, and I was going to add too that with regard to the magazine, you know, just a question to ask is, does it enhance your marital relationship? Does it add to it, or does it take something away? And I don't think that most of that stuff, whether it's any kind of pornography, is going to enhance the relationship.
Yeah,
I would agree. And it's very, you know, pornography is often sold that way to kind of spice up your relationship. But if we're really trying to, you know, the Bible talks of two flesh becoming one. If we're really trying to sort of merge our very souls together in this sort of this celebration of sexuality, you know, this sort of sacramental thing that we have, this gift, you know, any time that we need the thought of somebody else or sort of a specific situation to get us aroused, you know, we're on the wrong track there. Something, you know, something is wrong in that dynamic. But unfortunately, you know, that idea is sold very, very often, and it's a very destructive idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I also listen to a Catholic radio station, and they have a series called Theology of the Body.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Pope John Paul's work. That's fantastic.
It's just really opened up a whole, you know, different things for me to think about.
Yeah, it's a profound work, you know, and I'm not Catholic, but it's one of my favorite books. It's it's got some wonderful things in there. I've got to copy it on my shelf at work.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate your courage in calling.
Well, John, before we go on, I just want to remind people that if you or someone you know that's struggling with any type of infidelity, we're having an emergency marriage seminar coming up this weekend.
That's right. It is this weekend,
isn't it? Yeah, it is. Friday through Sunday, that's March 30th through April 1st. So call us at the offices at 512-346-9299. At least I had that phone number. Or just check out the website at affairrecovery.com, and there's lots of information. There's a brochure and a registration form there. So if you or anybody you know could benefit from that, give us a call.
Yeah, and wanted to, you know, just say a little more about what Sarah had brought up, you know, that we tend to sexualize people at an earlier and earlier age, and that's unfortunately a trend that really seems to be continuing. There used to be a sort of sense of protection between that era of childhood and adulthood. There sort of, you know, was a sort of a safety zone where kids were allowed to be kids. But if you look at a lot of the marketing trends and so forth, much is designed to get kids to sort of buy into consumer culture earlier and earlier. And as a result, you know, there's a lot of sexualizing that's going on. Kids are wearing more, risque attire and everything. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, Abercrombie and Fitch got into big trouble because they were marketing underwear to 10-year-old girls that had slogans like eye candy and things like that on there that were sexualizing them, basically. And that is a problem that's really, really going on when we don't honor that sort of idea of the sacredness of saving sexuality for marriage or for, you know, saving intercourse for marriage. And there is sort of a breakdown that happens with that. And I think that was a good point that Sarah brought up.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, it's...
Well, the other thing that, you know, during the break where you and George and I were talking about, this topic in general is not discussed very much in churches. And I'm not one of those that's going to knock churches or beat churches up for not kind of talking about some hard stuff. But But this really is, we don't hear this a lot.
No, unfortunately not, because I think given sort of the sacredness of sexuality, the church is really the first place we should be talking about this stuff, but it's become such a taboo subject. You know, I read somewhere that the three primary places where we learn about sexuality growing up, or at least kids today, is first from peers. You know, there's three P's, peers. Second, from public schools, which, you know, we can get in a whole talk about sort of the way sexuality is portrayed in public school sex education, or three, through pornography. Kids get online and start learning about sex through pornography, and that's pretty scary when you look at that. And arguably, there are some good sex education programs out there. I'm not trying to knock public schools either, but
sure.
But you know what's sadly missing in that? I would add a couple of P's myself if I had my preferences there, and one would be
parents.
Is
that another P?
Yeah, the preferences. Yeah, I guess that could be a P, but I would say parents should be a key one. You know, and also. The pulpit. I mean, I think we really should be talking about this stuff in church. But again, it's such a we have this kind of idea that that's an area you don't bring into church. And I wish we would, because I think that's where we really need to be talking about this and sort of reclaiming it. I think there's really a war going on for the soul of sexuality. And if we're not willing to talk about it as Christians, you know, how are we gonna win this war? And so, you know, I think there's a kind of a call to action in that this is something we really need to be talking about. And on the, you know, on the parent thing, let me, you know, reveal myself as a hypocrite once again, because, you know, it's funny. I often talk about sexuality for a living, as you know, and you know, I'm very good at telling other parents about what they should be talking about with their kids, you know, but sometimes I have a hard time convincing myself that my daughter's still not 3 years old and
right.
and so forth, and don't always practice what I preach and what I am talking about or not talking about with her. So, you know, when Christmas time rolls around, I'm still seeing if I can buy her some Little Mermaid pajamas or something like that, and she's 15 years old. So, I recognize that this is profoundly uncomfortable to talk about for a lot of people because it is largely outside of our comfort zone. We don't have much experience talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for Amy and I, we pray a lot, man. We're on our knees. God, please open that door. Please give them a heart to listen.
Yeah, I used to be much more laid back until I had a daughter. You know, that right. does change things a little bit.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, so what's the next topic that we want to talk about?
Well, do you want to? I know we're going to be up against a break here pretty soon, but you know, let's talk about sort of what you know. What is the purpose of sexuality in marriage? And before the break, I'll just kind of throw these out there, and then we'll talk about them a little more before we get back. But I really see three sort of godly functions of sexuality, and the first one is the procreative function. Certainly, we all understand that one. Without sex, you can't have children, and the human species dies out. But I think a much overlooked part is sort of the unitive function of sexuality, and this is an idea that we could talk all night about. Sort of the when sex is talked about in the Bible, very often it's used as sort of a metaphor of the very sort of closeness of Christ and His church, is sort of that absolute kind of connection that's going on. But the third function of godly sexuality, and this is the part that Christians sometimes have a hard time getting their head around, is the recreational function of it. And you know, this is a part that sometimes where we believe that we're really not supposed to enjoy this thing, and it was designed to be a pleasurable experience, and our guilt can kind of get in the way of that. But God very easily could have designed sexuality very much like other species in the animal kingdom, where the female laid an egg and the male came along and fertilized the egg and everything. But no, he designed it in such a way where there would be an intense pleasure associated with it, and we don't have to feel guilty about that. But the important part of that is, you know, we seem to understand the recreational function of it in this culture, but you can't really have the recreational function without the unitive function, and that's what we overlook. And that's where casual sex, or sort of the random hookup, I think spiritually cannot exist, because you just cannot pull off that sort of deep melding of the souls together in just sort of a random sexual encounter. Yeah. But our number here is 365-9930. And I guess we'll be back after the break.
Listen to what others are having to say
about the emergency marital seminar offered by the Affair Recovery Center.
This EMS weekend was very meaningful for me, and I feel it moved us along in such a positive way. I truly see success and forgiveness in the future.
Thank you so much. I came here for my wife, but I left with my life.
It was incredible to see God intervene in our marriage in such a visible way. Miraculous doesn't even begin to describe it.
You made this so easy for us to follow and understand, so comfortable.
As you can tell from past participants, the Emergency Marital Seminar has had a profound impact on the couples who have attended. If your marriage is at a point of crisis, we would like to invite you to come join us March 30th, 31st, and April 1st to be a part of this life-changing event. We can be reached at area code 512-346-9299, or you can go to our website at affairrecovery.com.
Do you believe in modern-day miracles? I do. Because daily, I witness them as couples who are torn asunder by infidelity are reconciled. Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, founder of the Affair Recovery Center. Please join us each Sunday evening from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time at Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God, where we witness on an ongoing basis the miracles of God. We have seen and witnessed that there is nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
So welcome back to the Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. Remember, if you want to contact us, you can call us at 365-9930, or if you're out of the local area, it's 1-888-527-2367. So, John, we've been talking a lot here about the role of sexuality in marriage, and I tried to get you to talk a little while ago about the differences between marital and non-marital sex, and I'm not going to let that go. So, what do you think about those two different?
You bet. I think one of the first things we would want to say tonight is that, you know, it's very possible to have non-marital sex in a marital relationship where you're having sex without sort of all the godly parameters that he puts around it. But when we talk about marital sex, we're talking about sex that's freely given, that sex that sort of renews the marital vows and the commitment that we make to one another. You know, that marital sex is really about our relationship with God, and it will increase the bond between spouses. You know, it's motivated by love, and it's really meant to be enjoyed as a free dance of love. And if we can, you know, contrast that to non-marital sex, it's, you know, non-marital sex is often taken. It's not freely given. And, you know, it may or may not feel like a renewal of commitment. I mean, a lot of people feel very much engaged when they're emotionally, when they have non-marital sex, but a lot of that's sort of illusory. And a lot of people think that they can use sex to draw closer to somebody, but it doesn't always have that effect. You know, in that regard, it may increase the bond between two people, but do nothing for the relationship between two people. And non-marital sex is really not a reflection of our relationship with God. It's just really about self-gratification and self-fulfillment. It's really not motivated out of sort of that desire to truly give to one another. You know, in the Bible, in the Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs, depending on which version of the Bible you're looking at, you know, he says something really interesting there. He refers to his bride at one point. He says something along the lines of, "My bride, my sister." And I like that, because the idea behind it is that if we do not have the same kind of protectiveness that we would have about, you know, someone dating our sister and how we would want our sister to be treated, if we don't have that same kind of protectiveness with our wife, then we have no business having sex with her. And you know, I think we look past that sometimes, and sometimes we just sort of objectify our spouses and we use them for our own pleasure without any thought of what we're doing for them, or what we're doing, or how we're sort of seeing our sexuality as a reflection of our worship with God, and our relationship with God. I think it looks like we have another caller online.
Hey, guys.
Hey, is this Rick?
Yeah, we're calling in from the Utah EMS. We just pulled back in from Utah, guys.
How'd it go?
It was great. Five couples just found a way to save their marriages. It was pretty cool.
Good deal.
How have y'all been doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Did you have a question for us?
Well, I suppose, what are y'all talking about since we've been on the airplane?
We were actually talking about the difference between marital and non-marital sex. You want to chime in on that, Chief?
That was actually what I was preaching on this morning at a church in Utah.
Yeah, what did you say?
I just said that not all marital sex is actually marital sex. Did y'all talk about that?
We talked about that.
You've taught us well.
Yeah, well, good. Well, as long as y'all are already covering it, we just wanted to let you know we're back, and we look forward to being back with you guys at the office on Monday.
Fantastic.
We're glad you're home. Glad you made it safely.
Thanks. Leslie said to tell you hi, John. She misses you.
Well, tell her I'll be at the airport as soon as I can.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Y'all
Thanks,
have a good
Rick.
Night.
Take care.
Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. You knew he couldn't leave us alone.
I know. You know, I was just looking at the clock, knew, and sooner or later, Rick was going to chime in on something.
We almost made it, too.
You know, and there's actually a concept that comes from sort of an Eastern greeting that actually I think is a pretty good reflection of the way we should see our sexuality with our spouse. You know, in much of the Eastern world, they greet each other with a term called namaste, and basically namaste means the divine in me greets and recognizes the divine in you. And I kind of think sort of godly sexuality is putting a Christian spin on that namaste concept, that when we get together with our spouse in to be sexual together and to celebrate the act of sexuality and the act of becoming one flesh, you know, if I cannot recognize and sort of greet the presence of Christ in my spouse, once again, I have no business going there. And I think if we can really look at it from that standpoint, sometimes this is something that'll, every time we say it in the church, you know, somebody tends to get offended by this, but we really see, you know, godly sexuality is really about an act of worship. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sex performed, you know, correctly is an act of worship. And for some people that just bucks up against everything they've sort of believed about sexuality.
Yeah, in that Puritan mindset, I guess, that we've had.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that in the namaste thing, I'm reminded of the C.S. Lewis. I think he talks about in his book called Miracles that we really are immortal beings, and we need to realize that just in context of sexuality and growing up in this promiscuous society. I love what you said also too about, you know, quoting Song of Solomon or Song of Songs, whichever, that the whole my sister, my wife or my lover is if it, just looking at getting a picture of being immortal beings and not just living in the here and now, that could be really huge and helpful, it seems like, to a lot of us, just kind of step up our thinking.
I agree wholeheartedly. And for you parents out there sort of struggling with what to do with sexuality with your kids, and that's a whole other topic maybe we'll have to dive into some night on this show. But, you know, one of the things I would say for you is sometimes we think about puberty as the time when our kids become sexual. And I think it's much more helpful, kind of reflecting what Wayne was talking about, that we recognize that we're born sexual creatures. You know, that sexuality is not about when we start actually having, you know, intercourse or sexual relations with the opposite gender. You know, we're born, again, with that sort of image of God's sexuality imprinted on us, you know, from the times that we're little. And so when sometimes parents ask me, you know, when's the best time to actually have that talk, you know, the talk, and I say, you know, really we should be sort of honoring sexuality and teaching our kids about that from an early age. That doesn't mean going into graphic detail about it, but from an early age, if we're teaching them to appreciate their bodies and see themselves as sacred creations, then we're really setting the groundwork for helping them to make more reasonable decisions later on. And I guess, you know,
don't you think it's more than just one talk? It's many, many,
definitely,
many, many talks.
It's a whole sort of progression from the time they're little to the time that they're, you know, getting to the time when they have to make some very, very difficult decisions. You know, sometimes they'll make a distinction between, you know, sexuality and sexualization, you know, and when we talked about sex and development of young people, and sex, you know, generally refers to the act itself, or in some cases the gender of the person. You know, sexuality, on the other hand, is a broader term encompassing the whole of a person's sexual makeup, which would include things like their thoughts, their knowledge, their feelings, their value sets, their self-concept, their family kind of mores and so forth. But sexualization refers to the process, the sort of developmental process of how we learn about and are exposed to sexuality. And this is where so many young people really get get hit very, very hard because the factors in our society today, the sexualization factors, are often incredibly destructive, often incredibly misogynistic, often have tremendously negative and destructive messages they send to our kids. And if we are not stepping into that gap to kind of provide some counterbalance or counterweight to some of those sexualization influences, we're really not setting or equipping our kids properly to sort of handle the battle out there. And again, it is a battle to try to claim this thing and cherish this thing. So summing all that in a nutshell, when a teenager's sexualization takes place in an unhealthy manner, it can really distort their sexuality, which can make them more vulnerable to making bad decisions about sex. So, for you parents out there, again, this is a terrifying topic sometimes to broach with our children. But if we can do it naturally, kind of from an early age, and for those of you who have teenagers now, don't beat yourselves up. Once again, I have done everything probably so far from perfectly that I really shouldn't even be speaking on this sometimes. But, for those of you, who haven't done it perfectly, it's never too late to engage in this discussion. And for those of you who sort of have had some your own shame and your own issues with sexuality, it's never too late to really get some healing from that and to really re-embrace who you are and re-embrace that gift. I don't care. We've all messed this up. I sometimes say I've yet, as a therapist, to meet the adult man or woman who doesn't have some guilt or some regret about something they did with their sexuality at some point in their lives. It's too easy to make mistakes and we do. We all do. That's okay. But one of the wonderful things about our faith is we do get that fresh start and all. So, yeah.
Well, John, I feel like we just barely scratched the surface.
Most certainly.
We could talk for weeks and weeks about some of this stuff.
And I hope we'll get the chance to do that again sometime.
Yeah, hopefully they don't kick us off of here.
But we do want to thank all of you out there for joining us tonight and being a part, of this and do want to tell you that you can go to our website at affairrecovery.com and register for our free newsletter and podcast if you're so interested. These free resources are available for all couples who are trying to determine what to do as a result of a betrayal or, as is the case sometimes with a sexual addiction. We're definitely here to help, and web resources are just a click away. So we want you to remember there's nothing that the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night.
Good night.